Welcome back to Books to Die For, and this is brought to you by the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. So today we've got a House of Mystery co-host, and he writes thriller spy books. And he's got a new book out now called The Burning Spy, and it's Spies for Hire, Book 2, Gavin Stone. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So listen, Gavin, Burning Spy. So what's this story all about? What do you got going on here in this book?
So this is the middle of a trilogy, and book one was really, really popular. People loved it. This is kind of giving you the next part of the story, and it's kind of, how can I put it? It's a massive journey for the characters involved, as well as not just a physical journey, but like a character journey as well. So we've got this mission of the main protagonist, Jensen, who is going to be fighting an unknown enemy as he goes.
Being a series like this, did you have this kind of mapped out ahead of time and you just kind of get the details out? Like, because you know where you're going with this series?
Loosely, yeah. I had a concept when I first started, and what I did is I wrote book one, so it could be read as a standalone if need be. And I thought to myself, if it's popular and people like it and the demand's there, then I'll carry on with book two and three. And if not, then at least I can say, well, it was a good book and I'll give it a shot. So yeah, I did kind of loosely have all three parts, because originally it was going to be a trilogy anyway. And although it has taken a couple of rapid changes before I actually hit the go button on number two.
So Spies for Hire, what is that in the series? Like, what's that about?
Well, what I've done is I've strayed away from the traditional kind of glossy exterior that Hollywood portrays as a spy, this kind of, you know, perfect Mr. and Mrs. Smith or James Bond kind of characters. And I've gone more down a realistic route with it. And what a lot of people don't realise is about 70% or more of the intelligence community is actually made up of contractors and private hired help. So I've kind of mixed in the realism of what that view would have to do, or what that perspective would be from a contractor's point of view, what we have to do in the world of intelligence, because it's very often overlooked. It seems to be the general public tend to think that you're either working for the government or you're not, and they don't realise that there's actually this private area that do a lot of work on behalf of the government, and that's kind of what I've spent a lot of my life doing and kind of put it into the book. To kind of say, look, this is a little bit of an area that most people don't talk about.
Now, your main spy, like the character, I guess I would say, is the British guy. His name's Jensen. So who is Jensen? Like, where do you get that inspiration for?
I would like to say he's loosely based on myself. However, if I could be a percent of how good Jensen is, then I'd be happy. He's me on my really, really, really best day, where everything goes right and everything works out well. That would be kind of the version. When the story was first written, it was I started going down an autobiographical route, and I wanted to kind of tell a little bit of a story of the things that I had done in my career. And in the end, there was that many complications and problems and potential issues that would have been caused from the book being released that I decided to write a fiction story as well, based on kind of my experiences and things I've done in the field.
Now, are you telling it from Jensen's point of view, or do you do it from another person?
Overall, it's kind of third-person omniscient, so it's mostly from Jensen's point of view. But there are other chapters or other bits of pieces where it does kind of change from to the other characters, which are Marshall and Darius.
How do you do that, like, without confusing your readers? Is there a certain way you present, let's say, when Marshall's coming in to talk from his point of view? How do you do that?
Yeah, it's something that was very difficult, and I learned by mistake when I was first having writing lessons. I'd kind of already written a lot of this out. And I did masterclasses with the likes of Dan Brown and a few other great people who've helped me along the way. And I realised that what I'd done was this omniscient point of view instead of being through the eyes of a single character. So what I did is I would actually write it in. So you'd have Jensen in a particular room, and I'd write it from his point of view, and then I'd say, you know, he didn't realise that back down in the street, Darius was doing X, and then it'd go to Darius's point of view, and You know, a bit like the kind of meanwhile back at the ranch kind of line here and there to kind of shift the perspective.
And how do you keep the action moving along? Or do you, like, is there a certain way that you make it so that there's always something going on in a chapter? Or?
Yeah, because when they kind of get handed this primary mission, as it were, the first thing they have to do is get to England. And from the minute they land in England, they're covering their tracks and things are starting to go wrong, left, right and centre. They don't understand how people are always kind of seeming to be ahead of them in what they're trying to do or keep catching them or coming close to catching them. So they're kind of on the run. And not understanding why they're even being chased or who by. So it's every kind of step of the way they get to another bit, they get across into Europe and then they nearly get caught again. And it just goes on until like towards the end when they kind of start to understand, we know why, we're behind the curve with everything, which gives them a slight advantage, just having a little bit of knowledge, but they've still got the odds kind of stacked against them physically.
How do you write the violence? Is there a lot of violence? Are you very open about how you write violence, or are you a little bit more conservative?
Yeah, no. I mean, some of it's from experience. So I grew up in a great big city in central England, which I'm not going to go too deep into details, but it can be a little bit of a hostile place at times. So, you know, all through kind of school, you know, the school I went to, if you had teeth, they called you a wimp. So we were kind of, it was a very fight for your life environment in some instances. And then, you know, that kind of went on later on with training. So these days, what I tend to do is, I go out and get myself into a bar fight, and then just go back and write what happened.
Oh,
no, I'm only joking.
No,
I don't. The rest of it's true, but the bar fight bit isn't.
Oh, please, come on! I know you do it. Yeah, you got to get the acting out. You know how you get into the violence and stuff. How graphic do you get?
I like to get it as detailed as I can to kind of. I want the audience to be able to feel everything that's going on. Even if they're feeling it from the person who's committing the violence, you know, they're kind of understanding what the other person is going through, you know, in their mind, because they're kind of fighting for their lives. And I don't mind getting graphic with it at all. It's something that I'm not scared of it. And sometimes I've watched people reading my books and I can see them flapping and screaming, you know, which is great, because it shows that I'm doing a good enough job for them to kind of be picturing it in their mind.
What do you hope the reader takes away from the story then? Is it entertainment? Do you want them to think about something, or is it, what do you want?
So mostly entertainment. You know, that's what, you know, the readers are picking a book up for at the end of the day. They want something that's going to kind of keep them interested. So I've got all the kind of the good stuff in there. You know, in comparison to the last book, you know, there's more explosions, more humor, more tradecraft. But you've also got all the nice little juicy secrets that are in there. In fact, I had to redact a particular part out, because what I did is I put the number for the CIA station chief in Prague in the book, and when I went back to check, it was actually still the active number for the CIA station chief in Prague, and oh dear, so I've had to redact that and one or two other little bits. Yeah, maybe when the numbers changed, I might give it an unredacted version. But yeah, so there's lots of tradecraft in the book. There's lots of little secrets that are in the book that people might not know about, and techniques that they can learn along the way. So that side of it keeps it interesting, as well as the story. And obviously shows the world from, like I say, the very unusual perspective of a contractor, more so than a government worker, which, in the intelligence community, contractors are pretty much looked down upon, but, you know, they do have to do some really hairy, horrible work from time to time.
Right. So do you think that it's portrayed typically in movies and books or shows or in media, period, how the agency works or how spies are or contractors, as you say? Do you think that's portrayed properly for people?
Parts of it are, yes. I mean, obviously, depending on what you're watching. But, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of moving parts in any intelligence agency. And obviously the layer of deniability has to be, for certain jobs, has to be in place. So you might have the seventh floor at Langley, for example, who'll turn around and say to, you know, one of the station chiefs, we need this particular job or we need this particular information. Then that station chief may look at hiring somebody off the books who will go out and find out that particular information, who have nothing to do with the CIA. And this is the kind of thing that MI6 and all the intelligence agencies do. They'll hire surveillance operatives, even Mossad, to go out and find particular information or do particular tasks and then come back and kind of give the information. So some do. I think, is it Jack Ryan? I think some of the little bits and pieces in that are pretty close from time to time. I mean, obviously, again, there's poetic license because it's for entertainment purposes. But, yeah, I think the biggest kind of trope of all is that spies are kind of perfect in every way. You know, can fight 100 people in a room and then walk out and kind of not a hair out of place and then drink a sip of martini.
Well, it's not that way.
No, we don't drink martini.
Do you have to be careful then about what you do put in the book?
I've got a kind of the moral code, as it were, if you want, with the likes of the stuff that I put in the book. So unlike some of the other CIA guys and MI6 guys and people who have to go through a pre-publication review, I don't have to. Because of the fact that because I was a contractor, I wasn't subject to the same rules and laws. I am still subject to the Official Secrets Act, though. And what that means is I can talk about things I've done, I can talk about training I've had, I can talk about fictional kind of situations, but I can't give away information on if there's a particular person at this particular house as a defector from X country, and that would then put that person in danger, or jobs that I've done, for example, where it could then be tracked back to the person or organisation or people behind it. So I'm sounding very nebulous while I'm talking about this with you, which is, sorry, I'm trying not to be. I'm trying to be specifically nebulous. That sounds like a good title for a book, doesn't it? That's specifically nebulous.
Yeah, that'll be book four.
Yeah, but at the same time, the kind of, what I do is, if I'm not going to put anybody's life in danger, and then the only other thing that I've said I won't put in a book is how to make explosives. There's loads of other things in there, but the explosives, I think, there's no reason why anyone would need the exact recipe for that. There is an exception in the first draft of part three, however, where I do kind of loosely give the details on how to make an improvised atom bomb. Not enough detail, I don't think, for anybody to actually try and recreate one.
Well, what's your favorite spy to watch or to read? Or do you have a favorite spy besides your own, of course, that you think hits home or you like for whatever reason?
Yeah, I kind of... So our friend from MI6, Charles Beaumont, who we interviewed not so long back, his book was really good because it was kind of, it shows that when you've left MI6 and you're out, it's difficult to get on. And when you become this middle-aged spy and you get this thing called, and this is like a agency or intelligence agency parlance, it's called seeing ghosts. And it's when you think you're being followed and you're not, because you've had that many years of checking your mirrors and that kind of thing, you start to see ghosts. So it kind of gives that kind of frame of mind. But obviously in the book, it turns out he was actually under surveillance. So he's one of my favorites.
Well, what do you get out of writing a book? Like, how does it make you feel?
It's good for me. It was therapeutic when I first started, because if you can imagine working in an industry, so unlike the military, who have parades and medals and kind of, you know, a lot of things like that, anybody working in the intelligence industry, generally they can't tell anybody. They have to keep a lot of secrets. They're not very open with what they do or where they've been and that kind of thing. So to put it all down on paper to start with was therapeutic, in the sense of, I'm letting something out here. It's a form of release. So it was great for me to be able to do that. And that allowed me also to kind of have an outlet for people to be able to know some of the things I've done without actually knowing the details of them. So it was enjoyable.
I noticed, you know, and it happens all the time, but, you know, agencies like the CIA and different ones, spy agencies, quite often will come into the spotlight and be under attack or be kind of talked about negatively and stuff. What do you think about that stuff? Is that reliable? Like, you know, for instance, the terror attack in Moscow, and they said the CIA did it, you know, or there's stuff like that. And quite a few people believe it. It's not just, you know, Uncle Joe down the road. It's, you see thousands of people kind of getting into that sort of thing, saying, oh yeah, and they're corrupting everything. They run everything. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Are people really that out of touch, or is it really kind of true? They do have a lot of involvement.
They do have a lot of influence, but I think the likes of the CIA is everybody's big bad at the moment in the world full of conspiracy theorists. And the moment something goes wrong or they don't like something, it's really easy because they're scared of what they don't know. And they don't know what exactly, I mean, they've got an idea, but they don't know exactly what the CIA does. So therefore, they kind of, you know, it's easy to point the finger at the target and say, you know, yeah, the CIA did that. And of course, the CIA are not the kind of organization to be on the news every 5 minutes saying, no, we didn't. And what really doesn't help them is when you look at the history of what the intelligence agency's done in the past, and you know, you had through the kind of 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s, they were testing different drugs and mind control options and on people. This got leaked out, which they obviously denied, and then declassified the files a few years later, saying that they actually were doing it all the time. And then from that, you got all the I told you so's. And what that seemed to do then was kind of rubber stamp any conspiracy theory for anybody else then, you know, it's like anything at all, you know, oh, the CIA killed all the dodos, you know, the CIA, you know, kind of shooting stars out the sky or whatever crazy it is this week. And people are kind of buying it because one thing from the 70s got confirmed.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those weird things that it'll never go away because people will never really know what's behind mm-hmm. the door in the CIA, right? They just see things on TV and they just think, wow, yeah, it's crazy, you know? So, that's cool. So what's the hardest part of writing a book like this?
For me personally, there are a lot of challenges, but there are parts of the job that I find personally really interesting, but then I'm like, well, will the reader find that interesting? So it's finding that right balance of what I like and what's going to keep the reader engaged. Also, I'm not confusing anybody with any parlance or terminology, so I've put a glossary in the book to kind of help out there. And then probably the most single difficult challenge is keeping a lot of action going on, you know, explosions and car chases and that kind of thing, which generally doesn't actually happen. And if it does, then you everything's gone horribly wrong. And at the same time, kind of trying to keep a level of realism. Everything in the book has been based on, you know, factual events, factual places, things I've actually experienced and done firsthand, and kind of, you know, if I mention a website in the book, that website's real. If I mention a code to a door in the book, that code is the door. You know, the code is to that door. So I've kept everything continuity-wise as real as I possibly can. But then obviously, you know, like I say, the usual explosions and car chases kind of thing are not something that generally happens. If you're doing that, then you've gone horribly wrong.
And so you go out there and chase people around to see how they react? Or
yeah, occasionally. I have to dress up to do that, though.
Yeah, put on a mask and just, you know. Strange
chicken
man.
Suit or something like that, you know, anything just to kind of see the different reactions.
So what's your relationship with Jensen? How do you write that character? Who is he?
He's kind of the best version of me that if I could ever be somebody, he's who I'd like to be. You know, his level of skill and intelligence. So what I do is when I write this character and I write him into a situation, and then I'll turn around and say, right, what would I do if I could do anything? If I was really great and I you know, I had these abilities or whatever, you know, or was much better at certain things, you know, how would I deal with this situation? And that's where I tend to approach it from. And of course, I don't always have things going right, because that would be boring. You know, you do have to have, sometimes you can't achieve certain things one way, so you have to come up with alternatives and be dynamic with it.
Yeah, it must be quite the process to go through. What's your favorite thing about writing?
I love to hear back from people when they've read the book and they tell me, you know, I mean, it's nice to know they've enjoyed it, but if there's one particular part where they say, I really laughed at this bit, you know, I've tried to keep a good amount of humour in the books, because in the real world, this is a lot of the time how we deal with situations, especially when it's a really bad situation, it's the humour that gets you through. So I've tried to keep that side of it, the banter between the characters and the humour going. So I've had a few people contact me saying, you know, I've spit my coffee out several times, you know, in your book, so you owe me 20 Starbucks by now, because, you know, I've spat that much coffee out laughing at some of the humour, which that kind of really cheers me up.
And that's got to be I'd imagine that's one of the hardest things to do, is to get the humor right or get it correct for these times, because nowadays things are pretty, you have to be careful on how you word things, you know, and what you're laughing at, because people get upset nowadays pretty easily.
Yeah, we are living in a world which is becoming ever increasingly delicate, and what I've done is I've kind of really pushed the boundaries there a little bit, because I thought to myself, if it gets some press, you know, and somebody makes a complaint, then it'll certainly help me. You know, what is it they're saying? Or any news is good news. That's the one.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, but it's same as you. You know, when you're writing about espionage and spies and agencies and going around countries and killing and stuff like that, and all the things going on in a spy book. I guess, do you pay attention to what's going on in the world of spies today and the world of espionage, and do you try to stay away from it, or do you try to duplicate it?
I've still got a lot of friends in the intelligence community and in the military, so I am kind of updated a lot with what's going on. And I love to see the three different versions of what's happening in the world. Because I get one version from friends in the know, and then I get another version which is on the news, kind of, you know, the 10 o'clock news telling you the version that they want the public to know. And then I get the internet version, which can be absolutely crazy or scarily close to the truth. And the three kind of, they overlap like a very clever Venn diagram, you know, it's quite impressive.
Well, which do you go with? I mean, are you know what I mean? Like, do you stay away from that sort of stuff?
No, not at all. I mean, I've actually had a lot of time and a lot of kind of possibly you could call it training to be able to look at certain information analytically, especially when it comes to you know, mainstream media, and be able to dissect it and say, well, look, is this headline information, or is it an emotional trigger? Is this article based on fact, or is it based on somebody's opinion? And to look deeper into, you know, the sources and, you know, even down to things like a survey, for example, which is trying to sway your opinion, you can look at it and say, well, hang on, when and where was the survey taken and amongst who? And all these different kind of factors can change entirely the results of a survey. And make an article that seems impartial very, very biased. So luckily I've had the kind of, like I say, training, as it were, to be able to look at things and take them apart and find out, when you get down to the meat and bones of it, is there actually any information there, or is this just something to sway opinion?
Do you ever write something and you're doing some writing in a book, like a story or something, and then something happens in the world that makes it so that it wouldn't work, and you just scrap it?
No, yeah, so I had something very, very similar in the first one, because I was writing this, the whole trilogy was written a long, long time ago, and it took me a long time to get it all right. So when I wrote the first one, there's a line in it where they're talking about Prince the singer, and they mention the fact that, you know, they're gonna, you know, what we're gonna do, we're gonna go to take him to a Prince concert or something along those lines, and then Prince went in and considerately died, Which was rather annoying, you know, probably a little bit more for him than me, admittedly. But yeah, it really kind of messed things up because I thought, well, what do I do now? Do I leave it in or do I have to change it? And it was so awkward to change it. And in the end, I just left it and I thought, I'll let people work the timeline out for themselves.
Yeah, you know, people are rude. Like O.J. Simpson die on a weekend.
I know.
I mean, you know, wreck your weekend. How rude.
Exactly.
he could have had some consideration.
He could have waited till a Monday morning at least.
Yeah. My God, you know, you can't win. Well, listen, so how do people get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Do you have social media? What's the get to gather?
Okay, so the if you want to follow what I'm doing writing wise, then all the usual social media sites. Twitter is I think it's at Author Gavin. I'm on LinkedIn for the kind of business things. Facebook is where I tend to stick most of my posts, which is just Gavin Stone Author. I have finally broken and set up a TikTok account, but I'm still working on I'm still trying to figure out how exactly that works. I am on Instagram as well, but I don't use that one as much.
Right. Did you do a website then or?
Yeah, which keeps changing because the guy who keeps messing with my SEO kind of stuff, keeps giving it a different name. So it started off as one thing. And I think at the moment it's GavinStoneAuthor.net, I think.
Well, there you go. We hear it all here, right? From the man himself. So now the book, The Burning Spy, it's Spies for Hire Book 2 is out now. People, get it. Don't miss it. And the author's Gavin Stone. Thank you for being on the show, Gavin.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.